Welcome to the Connections Podcast, a podcast devoted to how Unitarian Universalists of San Mateo connect to our beloved community. I'm Jack Brennan, Connections at UUSM. Our guest today is Matt Foyer. The most important thing you need to know about Matt is that he is married to one of my all-time favorite people, Kathy Kinner. It's safe to say that Matt is one lucky guy. He got his BA from Santa Clara University and his master's in political science from Northwestern University. For more than 32 years, Matt brought his enthusiasm, creative energy, instinct, and independent judgment to his practice as an attorney recruiter and trusted advisor to law firms and legal departments of companies. In 1995, he co-founded McClure & Foyer, a firm dedicated solely to attorney search. An active member of his community, Matt has served in leadership roles on the boards of George Hall Elementary School Site Council, Condra International Folk Ballet, Unitarian Universalists of San Mateo, and Homework Central. He spent 10 seasons coaching youth soccer. Matt is completely obsessed with road cycling and just about anything else that gets him outside. Matt, welcome to the Connections Podcast, and thanks for coming inside for the interview. I've been looking forward to this interview for quite a while. We have not had the easiest time scheduling this, but I'm glad we're both in town at the same time and able to meet up. Tell our listeners about your family, whatever that word means.
Well, but I want to emphasize, I really am obsessed about cycling. So now that we got that out of the way, we have two adult children and a daughter-in-law. Beth is our oldest. She is 37 and is in the midst of writing her dissertation at the University of Texas at Austin, and her specialty is special education. Then Danny and Daniela, or Danny and Danny, live with us probably for a few more weeks would be my bet. They met in Brazil, where Daniela was born and raised. And our son, Danny, went down with a couple of his friends to Brazil. One of his friends is Brazilian. And Danny did a couple of trips, met Daniela. They ultimately got married and have been married 5 years, I think. Daniela was able to get a visa to the States after 3 years. I'm glad it wasn't 10. They live with us, although they're tired of living with us, and we're about ready for them to move.
I was about to ask, what is causing them to move now? Is it just time or circumstances?
I think they're sick of living with us. And and you have to know, Danny and Daniela are just the most amazing cooks. So all I have to do is eat and do the dishes. Now, there are many dishes. There are always many dishes. Kathy is a cook in her own right, if she's allowed in the kitchen like a day a week. But the rest of them are just, I mean, these guys are just like machines. Wow. So we get Brazilian food and U.S. food and or food from the States. And yeah, it's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, sounds like it.
So that's it.
All right.
That's the immediate family. And Danny works with me, by the way. Danny is part of McClure & Foyer now.
Oh, is that right?
Right.
Oh, nice. Nice. How did you and Kathy meet?
Kathy and I both worked at El Camino Hospital in Mountain View. Kathy was a nurse in the transitional care unit, and I read cardiac oscilloscopes. I was a technician that read cardiac oscilloscopes. And we knew each other professionally. I was very, very, very briefly married at the time. Short story, not a happy one. Sometime after that marriage ended, I was finishing up at Santa Clara, went down to LA for a bit, came back, and then we just started to see each other. I invited her to come over for dinner. I cooked, what was it, a vegetarian pasta or something, I don't remember. But that was it. And we hung out together for a couple of years and then got married. We got married in 82. Moved to Chicago for grad school, and we celebrated our 41st wedding anniversary this year.
Wow.
Whoa.
Does that make you feel
pretty crazy? No, it makes me feel like, man, how do you keep it going?
Yeah.
That's it. You know, because everybody's changing, right? The world's changing and relationships are changing. And how do you keep it real?
You found the way, though.
We're still working on it. Yeah, because I think it's ongoing.
I don't think
it ever stops.
Right.
You know, the way we treated each other, the way we operated, because years later, she worked the PM shift at El Camino, I think it was, or maybe San Francisco. And she was in ER, she was doing all this stuff, and we would basically trade bodies. She would leave, I'd come home, I had the afternoon and evening shift, she had the morning shift, and you learn how to adapt. Or your marriage falls apart. Take your pick.
Yeah.
I like the adapt part. Yeah.
Where did you grow up?
I was raised in LA. I was raised in San Fernando Valley. Kathy was born in Fairbanks. And that's a lovely story about her parents, how they got to Fairbanks. But Kathy spent a year in Fairbanks. They moved to Red Bluff, California. Small farming, ranching community, a couple hundred miles north of Sacramento. When it came time for her to go to nursing school, she came to San Jose and never returned to Red Bluff. Hmm. Okay, here's the story because I have to tell you now that I set the stage for it. Kathy's mother and aunt flew from West Virginia to Fairbanks because their uncle was an early pioneer of the Brooks Range with Bob Marshall, co-founded the Wilderness Society. And Kathy's father, when he was discharged from military service, he was in the Philippines. He bicycled from LA to Vancouver, British Columbia, and then ended up in Fairbanks where there was a buddy. These pairs of people meet each other. They paddle on the Yukon River for 2 months, and two marriages came out of it. One marriage lasted, the other didn't last, but it was a great story.
Yeah, that is great, a great story.
So, yeah, it was pretty cool.
What kind of kid were you?
Boy. I would say studious, very outgoing, but studious. I love to read. My mom and dad were deaf, and there were books all over the house. My dad didn't read a lot. My mom read everything under the sun. I remember in the third grade, for example, there was a book in the school library called, you know, The Life and Adventures of Buffalo Bill or something like that. It had a brown cover, and I remember reading that book 3-4 times one summer. I love that book so much. You know, I was very interested in civic affairs, politics. I was pretty motivated. I was an Eagle Scout when I was 13 and a half. I was very driven by the stuff, doing the things, and student body president, all this other stuff. My parents used to pat me on the back and say, what a good job. When you get those strokes, you keep doing it because those strokes are good.
Right.
Very close family. Kathy's family, very close. Matt's family, very close. We learned to adapt. As the son of deaf parents, we really learned to adapt. We sat in a certain order at the dinner table. I sat to my mother's left. My brother sat to my father's right. And my sister, same thing, left and right. And my mother would read my lips. And I got to learn how to read her lips. I'm looking at your mouth right now because it's what I do.
Right.
My mother couldn't hear. My dad had some hearing, but then he lost the rest of it. So my mother used to tell us that she could hear the deep tones in the floor, like bass tones, so she could dance to it. And she would sing, and her singing would be just all over the map. But she was a great dancer.
Yeah.
Just a fabulous dancer, as was my dad.
Nice.
It was a nice childhood. I had a really nice childhood.
So you had three siblings?
Yes.
Two boys and two girls.
Right.
And where were you in the birth order?
I wish I was in the top of the food chain. I wasn't. I was number two. I say that because my older sister was the second mother. I didn't like being bossed around.
Yeah.
I still don't like being bossed around. It just tweaks me.
That's why your name's on the door.
That's right. It was funny because my older sister, Bev, just celebrated her 70th birthday. And we were down in Carlsbad, Oceanside, that area. We had a small gathering. It was a family reunion. We had a small gathering at their house. And people went around and reminisced about Bev. And I said, man, she was so bossy. Yeah. And my brother was aghast. He was absolutely, because he's younger than me by 2 years. He was aghast. He said, I don't remember any of that. And I thought, well, I remember it. Now we can kid each other. We can laugh. And we have a lovely relationship. But in the beginning, I would say to her, get out of my face, Bev. Because I had to. It was my job. Somebody had to say it. And I got to do it.
When you were in, say, high school, what were your dreams about what your future would look like?
It was in the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. I alternated between getting suspended for going to, you know, the school got locked down. Mm-hmm. A bunch of us climbed over the gate, went to a rally at Cal State North, which was down the street. I was very active in student politics. And the other piece was I flew with the principal to Strategic Air Command in Nebraska, because the Air Force was courting student body presidents to enter the Air Force after graduation. I was wooed into the possibility of joining the Air Force. I knew I was going to go to college. My parents didn't push it. They didn't encourage it, discourage it. It was just like a zero. I think they did encourage working. And I worked from the time I was 13. I was had a Fuller Brush business. And I sold flowers and did all this other crazy stuff. But I think I knew I was destined to do something. I wasn't going to just be in Los Angeles, and I left LA as quickly as I could. Mm. I did not like Los Angeles at all. Just it wasn't my place. And the Bay Area was. And I knew that as a kid. I had family that lived here. And I knew it. I knew it when I was 8, 9, 10 years old. Wow. When we came up here. I knew I would be living here.
You got your undergrad degree at Santa Clara University in 1980. What made you decide on Northwestern for your master's?
It's an interesting story in mentorship. When I was at Cal State Northridge, I took this history class. I was a transfer student. And this history class was U.S. history. And the book that we used was written by this professor. And there was one day I stayed behind for some reason. And this professor and I were just talking. And he said to me, you don't belong here. You belong at Santa Clara University. I didn't know anything about Santa Clara. And he said, it's a liberal arts school. It's up north. That's where you should be studying. And I was pretty motivated. And I said, okay. And I applied, got in, and went there. And when I was in my senior year, there's a senior thesis you have to do. This is the political science department. And the professor was a former Jesuit who had a family, gave up being a priest. His senior seminar was on the relationship between religion and political ideology. Mm-hmm. I ended up going to the theological seminary at Berkeley and to the library. And I talked to the librarian about what I was doing for my senior thesis. And she said, there's an Anglican bishop that lives in Santa Barbara who was deported from South Africa in 1965. Mm. And I have his telephone number, and you should give this guy a call. Wow. And his name was the Reverend C. Edward Crowther. So I called him, and I said, this is what I'm doing. And he said, I want you to fly down here, literally 2 days' notice. I'm leaving for Haiti to do this class, a cooking class. And we talked a little bit, and he said, besides being the Anglican bishop for California, I'm also a lawyer and a psychologist. And by the way, when I was deported from Kimberley and Coromon, South Africa, and it was on the cover of Time, by the way, just to throw that out, he said, I took 3 or 4 boxes of papers with me, and nobody's ever looked at them. And we went into his garage, and he said, these are the 2 boxes you need to take back. Wow. And I flew back with these 2 boxes of documents. And from there, I wrote this thesis. And it was just like, unbelievable. There were 2 professors at Santa Clara who said, okay, it's African studies, it's political science, here are the schools. So it's Northwestern, Indiana U at Bloomington, UCLA, GW, I forgot the others, maybe Stanford, maybe Berkeley. So I got into some of the schools and I ended up going to NU because their emphasis was not so much South African, although they had some scholars from Zimbabwe. One guy who's from South Africa, he was deported and ended up in Rhodesia / Zimbabwe. And it was great. It was a great experience. And I thought about going on at NU everybody has to go into the master's funnel. Some of my colleagues already had master's degrees from these amazing schools in the country, and they had to go back and get second master's degrees. So of 18 students, there were probably 8 that were admitted on. And I was admitted on, but I never planned on doing it. Plus, there was no funding. Mm-hmm. I talked to Kathy, and I thought, I'm not going to go in debt up to my eyeballs.
Right.
I looked into the salaries of, you know, PhDs who were at universities. It was just like $3.50. And I thought, I'm not doing that. To some extent, I regret it a little bit, but not a lot.
Yeah.
It would have been a wonderful experience, but being in debt up to my ears, no thank you. We came back here, and I had every plan to go to law school anyway. That was what I wanted to do. And then end up maybe in South Africa or Southern Africa somewhere. So that's it.
I've been thinking that the attorney recruiter career path for you started right away after college, but it sounds like you did something else for a while.
Yeah,
did you get to that?
After Santa Clara, I worked as a paralegal at a law firm by the name of Heller Ehrman White McAuliffe, big national firm. I was there 2 years maybe, then NU. Then I came back and worked in Heller's Palo Alto office. And it was all litigation. I had a pretty good sense of what this was. And I ended up going to Wilson-Sonsini, which then, you know, this incredible firm in the Valley that just was the go-to firm. I did some work there. And then I was admitted to Santa Clara Law School on a fellowship and knew what law firm practice was. And at the end of my first week, on a Friday evening at 5 o'clock, and it was at 5, Kathy said, I'm pregnant.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, oh, isn't that great? Oh, shit. Really, it really went that way.
Yeah.
And some people could do it. And I flipped to the night program. And at some point, I just thought, I don't even know if I want to go to law school.
Yeah.
I wasn't really sure because when I was at Wilson, I was working with their MIS director or the de facto MIS director. And we started dinking around with litigation support tools. And we thought, we can turn this into a business.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote a business plan. We showed some VCs. We showed some partners at the firm. They said, no money for us. Really interesting idea. I called my dad, who then could still hear. And I said, do you need a lawyer in the family? Literally, do you need a lawyer in the family? Because I'm thinking about this other thing. And he said, no, I really want a son who's really excited about what they're doing. And I withdrew 1 week to the day.
Wow.
1 week to the day. It was Monday to a Monday. And first business, very poorly done because I had no idea what I was doing.
Yeah.
Then I did management consulting with a focus on, you know, the company was doing litigation support and looking at management structures in law firms.
Mm-hmm.
And they started doing a little bit of recruiting. The principal said, Matt, guess what you get to do? And I thought, yeah, great, I don't know what I'm doing. But I started doing it, loved it. And then a couple years later, I joined a very well-known legal search firm. And that's where I met my partner. 5 years later, we spun off.
Yeah.
Wow. Phew, man.
You must be good at it.
I don't know. Today, I don't feel like it. And yesterday, I didn't feel like it. But every day's a little different.
What do you love about
this
man. Work?
Honestly, Jack, I think I am the luckiest person on the planet. I really love what I do.
Yeah.
I have always loved what I've done professionally. But it's changed so much. It's so commoditized now.
Mm-hmm.
But I loved and still love having an interaction where this guy just had breakfast with. Met him some years ago. His family have been donors of Homer Central, but lawyer, moved into executive positions in business. We just sat for an hour and talked. And I love that, and thinking about what's the right thing for him, and considering that. And then I had a call 15 minutes later from a corporate lawyer down in Southern California who's been papered all over L.A. And I was very careful. It was a 10-minute call. I got off that phone thinking, I can't help this guy.
Mm.
I'd love to, but I can't because he's been papered. He's been presented to all these firms, and it will not be a good use of our time.
Right.
But I really love the human interactions and making matches. And over the years, we have had very few deals fall apart. I love that. And I love chasing down new business and meeting people.
Right.
And yeah, I really love it. I absolutely love it.
That That's great.
Yeah.
What's your religious biography? We haven't talked about that at all.
I was raised in a Jewish family. Okay. I was bar mitzvahed. I never really felt the connection. Mm-hmm. Ever. The only thing I can say is it was family gathering.
Right.
It was community gathering. And I like that. Some of the guys I ride with that I've ridden with for years and years are pretty active in their temples. And I wanted to, but I just couldn't feel it. And I remember looking, actually, when I was at NU, I remember thinking about Baha'i faith. And I remember when I was at Cal State Northridge, I attended a concert with Seals and Crofts, who were members of the Baha'i faith. I was drawn to it, but I wasn't drawn to the, by the way, abortion, forget about that, and some other stuff that I just couldn't get my arms around. Kathy and I, when we decided we were going to get married, she was raised in a Catholic family, Matt was raised in a Jewish family, Kathy's aunt, I think she was a member of a Unitarian church, maybe down in San Jose, but very involved in social justice work. And we stumbled on the idea that if we got a Unitarian minister, we would either tweak one side of the family or the other side or both sides, and maybe it would neutralize everything. So we thought, we're going that way. And phone book, Yellow Pages, San Mateo, and called Bernie Kruger, the reverend, and said, feel like marrying us? And he said, sure, come on over. Just like that. And we came up the stairs right over here in the building, sanctuary,
right.
Sat in his office, and we decided to get married in Half Moon Bay. And he said, yeah, we can do that. And met maybe twice. This is an elongated answer, but I think it's a sweet story. We get married in April, and in August, we're heading to Chicago, right? And disappeared, because we lived in the city, and then we did some other stuff. And we came back, and we bought a house in San Mateo Village, and down the street, unbeknownst to us, lived the Dumonts,
right?
Barb and Charles. And the girls, Jennifer and Beth, were buddies. I think maybe the girls were 7 or 8 when the event happened. And the event was, Beth was invited to stay overnight. She called me, I answered the phone, she said, family would like me to go to church with them in the morning. And I said, sure. Didn't know what church, didn't know anything. And she came home and she said, I'm going to be in a church play. Just like that. I'm going to be in a church play. I thought, oh man, I don't even know which one. We must have become aware of where, because I brought her to rehearsal and there was Bernie's picture on the wall. And we joined the congregation 2 months later.
Wow. That's a great
and
story.
And never, ever, ever look back. Yeah. Ever look back. This was it. It has been.
What are some of the roles you've had in the church over the years?
Yeah, I always did some board stuff. So I chaired the board for a while. I was on the board for a while. I might have been on stewardship at one point. And then it was just kind of the little stuff you do. Yeah. Right?
Right.
Here's a Saturday cleanup. Let's clean up. I never really got involved with RE. I think Kathy did, if I remember right. Ministerial Search Committee, I chaired that at one point. Bringing in Bill Weller. Forgot that. Gosh, there was something else. The Committee on Ministry.
Mm.
Right around the time that Ben was leaving. And I had to step off. I had to step off because of some health reasons. That kind of stuff.
You've sort of answered the question about what brought you to UUSN.
I was trying to cut to the chase, Jack.
Yeah, that's good.
I knew it was coming.
That's good. So describe the first time that you knew you belonged here.
When I sat in the pews. First time I sat in the pews, yep. The feeling of comfort and the feeling of connection. Didn't know anybody except for Barb and Charles, who have been dear friends all these years. But I think it was just that feeling that, man, it was peaceful. And I loved the music, and I loved what was being said. I don't remember meeting a lot of people. I'm sure I did in Beck Hall. But it was just like, wow, this is cool. And it was calming. And I'm pretty high strung. And I need a place where I can just listen. and say and thank.
Yeah. What are you most excited about in terms of the renovations?
Man, there are a couple of things that I've felt strongly about for years and years, and that is, if we're not going to turn this place into something that is welcoming, then we ought to get rid of it. We ought to find a place where we can embrace the community. Because we're in a neighborhood, a very mixed neighborhood. And I just like the fact, I like being in a neighborhood with neighbors that we can say hello to, that we can welcome if they choose to come in. I love the idea of the sanctuary being renovated. I love the idea of our congregation being ADA compliant. That just blows me away. That's taken all these years.
Yeah.
And I'm not pointing fingers. I'm just thinking, come on. Don't talk the talk. Walk the walk. Because the talk is easy. But I know it's complex. But I want to be here. Frankly, with the sound of Homer Central kids in Beck Hall.
Right.
Because it drew neighbors. Because the kids live around here.
Sure.
It drew volunteers from UUSM. It was just great. I tutored at UUSM here for a year and a half, something like that. I like the idea of our footprint being a footprint for the community, the outer community and the inner community, and a welcoming community.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to its beauty. But I thought the sanctuary was beautiful to begin with. I always loved it.
Right.
That's clearly what we needed.
Yeah.
So I'm ready, and I know others are too.
Yeah.
And we're excited about it.
Definitely.
That's a good question. That's a really good question.
All right. We are going to wrap this up with some quick hitters.
Sure.
I'm going to ask you a quick question. You give me an answer. Here we go. You ready?
Yes, ma'am. Let's
All right.
roll.
What's the best sandwich?
Pastrami.
Pastrami.
Pastrami on rye.
On rye. It has
with
to
hot,
be.
With hot mustard.
Hot mustard.
Are you kidding? That's
Absolutely.
Not even that's not even a question.
What would a perfect day be like for you?
I think there are two perfect days, actually.
Okay.
The first perfect day is driving down the coast with Kathy. And it's gorgeous and it's hot. And there are clouds all over the place. And the second day is I'm riding my bike by myself and I'm climbing and I'm feeling my heart pound and I'm seeing clouds and there's wind and I'm thinking I am the luckiest dude on the planet and I get the whole enchilada.
Yeah, great.
My kids are in there too, by the way. They're in there. They might be 1.5, but they both involve being outside.
Yeah. If you could wake up tomorrow with one particular talent or ability or even a superpower, what would it be?
Man, I don't know. Jack, I don't know.
No?
I don't have an answer for you. No, I do.
Okay.
I played guitar for probably 25 years and haven't picked up that guitar in 30 years, 35 years. I would love to be able to pick up a 12-string, left-handed 12-string, and it's come back. It's just, the sounds came back, and I could sing. I don't think I can sing very well now, but yeah, just to be able to, wouldn't have to go to school, wouldn't have to go to class. I just pick up 12 or pick up 6 and just go at it, like Chris.
Yeah.
Who is just this amazing musician.
Yeah, he really is.
Oh, my God.
That's a good one. What's the most used app on your phone?
Man, Outlook.
Outlook, okay. So you use your phone in a more traditional way.
Yeah.
Do you still make phone calls?
I try to, but a lot of our lawyers are saying, man, we don't want to talk on the phone. We're overwhelmed with calls. I use all day long Outlook, text messaging, and Google. To do searches.
Sure.
But what I'm hearing from clients over and over again is, if forget about Zoom, forget about in person, just send me a text.
Yeah.
Send me an email.
Yeah.
And I'm fighting that tooth and nail, actually.
Of course.
And not winning.
That's right.
But I'm going to still try.
Yeah. If you had to live in another country, what country would that
Brazil.
Be? Brazil.
Brazil?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think so.
Yeah. You've spent some time there.
We were there in February. No, I loved it. Yeah. I think the other possibility would be Argentina. We spent time in Brazil, Argentina, a little bit in Chile, Costa Rica, and loved Costa Rica. But and Argentina really blew me away.
Hmm.
Just blew me away. But Brazil may be number one on the list now.
Yeah. What are you reading right now?
In and out. I'm reading one book written by Thich Nhat Hanh about being present and breathing. I found through diagnosed with depression and an anxiety disorder some years ago that learning how to breathe, man, it helps slow me down.
It does. It
makes me more present. So I'm reading that. I just picked up a book off the shelf yesterday about Reflections by Jimmy Carter that I'm going to start reading. A guy today recommended a book written by an MD and some other guy about health and living well. And I thought I'd read that too. I'm generally juggling two books at a time.
Yeah.
And then sometimes I just listen to tunes.
Yeah.
Old tunes.
What is the best movie ever made?
I'm not much of a movie person. I don't watch movies much at all.
You never did?
Not much.
Huh.
No, not much. And not much in recent years.
Okay.
And I just find that sometimes when something comes in to me, I can't let it go at night. It kind of stays with me.
Yeah.
So if I'm looking at anything, no violence, just nothing. I don't want to see animals being killed. It really bothers me a lot. I much prefer films that open you up, but don't tear you apart.
Yeah, sure. Fine line, yeah. What is the best movie snack?
Chips or popcorn, take your pick.
Something crunchy then. Crunchy instead of sweet.
Crunchy, kind of sweet, and salty.
Salty.
The reason for the salt is, you know, when you're riding a lot, you get rid of a lot of salt. So my excuse is, I just rode for an hour and a half. I just rode for 3 hours. I can eat all these chips.
Yeah.
All it's right. Actually a bunch of bullshit, but I like it. I like the rationale.
However you can rationalize
yeah.
it to yourself.
Okay, I can
That's
do that.
Good. No, yeah. What keeps you up at night?
I think it's two things. I worry about my kids. I worry about where they're at. I worry about what the planet's doing to them and to all of us, the state of the world. And at a local level, we've just reconfigured my business. And I have an opportunity to change it and change it in a meaningful way. And I'm excited about it. And I'm worried to death about it.
Yeah.
And it's not financial. There's an opportunity. But it takes a lot of work, and I don't want to work 7 hours a week. I used to do that. I'm just not doing it anymore. I'm not.
Yeah.
How do you do that in a meaningful way? There are times, and tonight might be the same, although I'm riding big hunk of tomorrow, where I'm just kind of chewing on stuff.
Yeah. Sure.
I'm trying not to.
Yeah. What do you think happens after we die?
I think we become energy. I don't think we're given a pass upstairs or downstairs. I don't think it works that way. There was something in my mind about being a, in quotes, good person that gives me confidence that whatever's following, whatever form that's in, whatever flavor it's in, it's going to be okay. I don't think there's some dude with a big white beard, any of that stuff. I just don't. Could be a metaphor for something else. You know, I'm not smart enough to figure that out. I don't know. I just don't know.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, you know, do we come back as another creature? Yeah, maybe. I can't wrap my head around that. It doesn't make any sense to me, but you know, I'll go with that if somebody thinks that. But I think we become energy.
Okay. What's the best smell?
God, flowers. A rose.
A rose.
A rose. Absolutely, that knocks you. It just takes you down to your knees. It just envelops you. Yeah, it's a rose.
And what's the best religion?
I don't know if there is one. I mean, I'd like to say Unitarian Universalism, but, you know, I just don't like the idea of exclusion. There's room for all of us. I hope there's room for all of us. I wonder if that's actually true. But I think any faith that welcomes, that doesn't limit, you know, you can come in, you can't come in. I think that's better. I think that's better for us, better for me.
Yeah. Thank you, Matt, so much.
You're welcome, Jack. It's been fun.
Sitting down.
It has been fun. I must admit, it's been real fun.
Really?
Oh, yeah, it's been
easy
peasy.
Good.
It has.
Well, good. Maybe that will encourage more people.
Yeah, I think it's great.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you kind of caused me to think a little bit, so thank you.
And thanks to our listeners. Keep making connections.